So, hello everybody. It's nice to see you. Thanks for joining us today for our November leadership call. I am Tressa Grauer. I am the Vice President for Thriving Communities at Reconstructing Judaism. The voice you heard at the beginning is Nina Korakin, the Associate Director for Thriving Communities, and Nina has been responsible for organizing the leadership calls this year. Before I introduce you to our speakers for today, I want to open it up with our Reconstructionist blessing for community work. So Nina has put a slide up here for us all to share. You can feel free to unmute. We like to do this in cacophony. I'm gonna start us off. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam Asher kikshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu l'asuk b'tzorchei eibur. How
Amen.
full of blessing you are, Eternal One, our God, Majesty of the universe, who has consecrated us with your commands and commanded us to occupy ourselves with the needs of the community. Amen.
Tressa, you said it was a Reconstructionist blessing, and I just have to report that we are now hearing reports of Reform congregations using it at their board meetings too, which is kind of
Really?
awesome.
Okay, that is awesome. And thanks to Rabbi Jeremy Schwartz for his early rendition of that blessing. It has also been set to music. For those of you who want to sing at your board meetings, we have a musical version of that. If you would like it, please let us know. It is hard to do on Zoom, so we are not singing our blessing. Okay, I want to start by introducing our speakers today. Some of you may be familiar with them, but I will give a little bit of an introduction so you know who you'll be talking to. Rabbi Elise Wechterman is a graduate of RRC, the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, class of 2000. And she's been the CEO of the Reconstructionist Rabbinical Association since 2015. The Reconstructionist Rabbinical Association, fondly known as RRA, in short, is the Professional Association for Reconstructionist Rabbis. While still in rabbinical school, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Elise, but I think this is right. While still in rabbinical school, Rabbi Wechterman also worked for the National Movement, then known as JRF, as the Director of Congregational Services, before serving as the spiritual leader for Reconstructionist Congregation Agudas Achim in Attleboro, Massachusetts, from 2001 to 2014. She also teaches rabbinical students at the RRC and at the adult level in many settings, and including consulting with Reconstructionist affiliates about many things like governance and growth and staffing and topics like she'll be discussing today. Rabbi Elliot Skidell also graduated from the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College a few years before Elise in 1980. And he currently serves as the interim director of rabbinic placement and employment for the RRA and for Reconstructing Judaism. And throughout his long career, he's done lots of things, including working for the Galilee Education Foundation and the Jewish Agency during the many years he lived in Israel. He also spent many years as a congregational rabbi in congregations in Pennsylvania, in Florida, and in New York. Most recently, he spent 14 years as the rabbi of Reconstructionist Congregation Beth Emeth in Rockville Center, New York. And in that role, I would say he notably led the congregation through the creation of a partnership with Central Synagogue of Nassau County. And as he describes it, through a progression of cohabitation to cooperation, collaboration, and finally consolidation as Central Synagogue Beth Emeth. So a discussion of that process might be the subject of another leadership call, but for now, I want to welcome both Elise and Elliot to today's topic of rabbi-congregation relationships, liaison committees. So welcome. Turning it over to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to start with a few remarks, and then Elise and I will more or less alternate or interrupt one another if we have something to say. And of course, we welcome your questions, but we would appreciate if you hold on to the questions, write them down, write them in the chat so that we have a place to refer to them. But if we start delving into questions while we're making our relatively brief presentation, then we'll probably get lost and go off into many tangents and not have an opportunity to answer those questions. So that's just a word of introduction. We are going to try to focus today on the concept of liaison committees. Liaison committees are sometimes called by other names. Some congregations call them the Rabbi Success Committee or the Rabbi Development Committee. And there are probably other names that have been given that maybe I haven't even heard. But we're going to try to focus on what we call the Liaison Committee, Rabbi Liaison Committee. And Rabbi Liaison Committee is actually one of three, I would say, different but interrelated or interconnected processes that go on in congregations where there is a rabbi, whether it's part-time, full-time, interim, any congregation that is dealing with a rabbi in place. And those three interconnected processes are supervision, liaison, and evaluation or assessment. So supervision, of course, is usually the rabbi has regular conversations with the congregational president, weekly or monthly, biweekly. Those regular conversations are important for smooth operation, regular communication. There's also usually a ritual committee or religious affairs committee. And the president and the religious affairs committee, those are the ones who have quote unquote supervisory roles for the rabbi. Usually, I always say usually because many congregations may have other setups or different ways of dealing with these things that are even in their bylaws, but there's usually someone who's designated for supervisory role. Then there's the evaluation or assessment, which usually takes place on an annual basis. It's an important channel of communication for continuing improvement of the rabbi-congregation covenantal relationship. And I know we'll probably mention a few times today the Purple Book, which we lovingly call it because of the cover, color of the cover, but the official name is the Rabbi Congregation Relationship, A Vision for the 21st Century. And there's a lot of information in there about annual assessments and reviews. But if we're talking about today, the liaison committee, we do recommend that every congregation have a clergy or rabbi liaison committee that meets with the rabbi regularly to share concerns and solve problems that arise. The liaison committee, we always stress, is a two-way street. The rabbi can raise issues as well as the members of the liaison committee, and the committee acts as a sounding board for things that the rabbi may be facing or dealing with and needs someone to listen, sometimes respond, sometimes offer advice, guidance, give some background to what's going on in the congregation. It's not a kvetch committee, put it that way, right? It's not the opportunity to just kvetch. It's a forum for open communication and for problem solving. And with that in mind, I'm going to turn it over to Elise. Keep those three interconnected things in mind, but our focus today is on that liaison committee.
Hi, folks. Thank you so much, Elliot. Thank you, Tressa. Thank you, Nina, for organizing. I'm really delighted to be here with you. As you can hear, I am not 100% well. This is not my normal voice. So bear with me as you can, and I'm really glad that Elliot and I are doing this together. We'll take turns, and in between I have water, tea, and all sorts of things lined up here. So thank you, and I'm really happy that you're here in this call at this moment, which I know is not easy for everyone. This has been a very hard time for our people and our communities. And even though we're not talking about that today, I want to underscore that coming together in community for the business of the community is one of the ways that we strengthen each other and succor each other at this time. So I'm really happy to see you. So liaison committees. I love talking about liaison committees. I think I could do this all the time, and I often do. One of the things that I want to start with is that the goal of the liaison committee is essentially the rabbi's success. It is not so, right? So it has to underscore, like, the point of this committee is for the rabbi to be successful. We want the rabbi to be successful, and this is going to help the rabbi be successful. It's not a gotcha committee. It's not a place to collect complaints, as Elliot was talking about, with the goal of dumping them onto the rabbi, but it's actually part of the process of helping the rabbi figure out how to succeed. As Elliot said, it's a two-way street. Communication panel, the rabbi can bring concerns or issues and seek help and how to address that, just as the liaison committee can bring issues and concerns to the rabbi and help strategize with the rabbi about how to address those. The conversations within the context of the liaison committee are strategy conversations, right? They're not necessarily this person said this, this person said that. They may include that, but they're strategy conversations about what's the strategy that we're going to take to address whatever concern was raised. And because it's often a new concept, because sometimes people get nervous when they say we're creating a committee for conversations about how the rabbi's functioning, it's really important that the role of this committee and how it operates is clearly and regularly communicated to the larger community. This should be seen as something that is normative, not unusual. And the more normative it is, the less anxiety producing it will be for everyone involved, including the rabbi, including congregants, including everyone. It should meet, so like regular means it should have regular meetings, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. It should be something that's listed along with all the other committees in the community. Excuse me, and I've just put into the chat, with permission, an example of a communication from one of our congregations, Emek Shalom, out in Oregon. Is that where they are? Oregon, right. With Rabbi Julie Benioff is the rabbi there. They have actually just recently redone the communication to their community about liaison committee. And I've put that example in the chat for you because I think it's actually a really good one that lays out the role of the committee. And they've also laid out what they are not. For example, it is not something that prevents anybody from going and having a conversation directly with the rabbi. In fact, it actually encourages people to go and have conversations directly with the rabbi. And so the more we make this explicit in written communication and regular communication, the better off everyone is. I'm going to pause and let Elliot talk about the makeup of the liaison committee. Who's on it?
Thanks, Elise. I believe that I sent that document also to Nina for distribution following this session today. And if I didn't, Nina, just let me know and I will make sure that you do get it. So you don't have to worry about going into the chat and doing a screenshot or downloading it or anything like that. You'll all have it with the other materials that you'll receive at the end of this session. So who serves on this liaison committee? First of all, most congregations, it's the president's prerogative to appoint members of committees. If there's something different in your bylaws, then of course you go by your bylaws. But assuming that the president is appointing members of the committee, we recommend that the liaison committee consists of 3 to 5 people and that those appointees be agreed upon by the president and the rabbi. It's not just the president making the decision and saying to the rabbi, these are the 3 or 5 people that I'm appointing. That should be one of the conversations that the rabbi and the president have during their regular interactions to agree on who these few people are. It should be people with, let's call them, breadth and depth of knowledge of the community, people who are engaged and active members. And we recommend that at least a couple of the people, one or two, be what we might call elder statespeople of the congregation. They may be people who are still very, very active, or they may be people who have stepped back from their regular ongoing activity, but have been members for a while, and who have some historical perspective and institutional memory, so that they can bring that perspective into the conversations that are held with the rabbi on this ongoing basis. So if you're already thinking about who might be on your rabbi liaison committee, that's good. but make sure that you have that conversation, or the president has that conversation with the rabbi before people are approached and asked to serve on the liaison committee. Of course, once the liaison committee is in place, there's a process for meeting regularly with the rabbi that that is initiated. And Elise will talk a little bit more about that process.
Okay, before we go on to the process, actually, let me stop now and see if there are any questions about the makeup of the committee or communication about the committee. Just want to give people Mara.
So I have two questions. The first is, are there typically term limits? Or like how does kind of like the flow of the committee work?
Right. That's great. That's a great question. This is one of those committees. And of course, every congregation is different and may have different rules about whether or not there are term limits on committees, as well as it's my bias that there should always be term limits on the board, but not necessarily. Committees are a little bit different. I don't think that there should be that necessarily needs to be written or sort of, you know, statutory term limits. This is a committee where you want people to serve for as long as they're comfortable serving. And when they're ready to think about stepping off, hopefully it will be such a positive experience that they'll stay on it for a couple of years. And then they'll let you know with plenty of warning that they're thinking about stepping back so that you can bring someone new. Whatever it is, once it's established, it's ideal if the terms are staggered, right? So like you may, if it's three people, you'd like to avoid a situation where all three people turn over at the same time. So even if you start it all at the same time, because when you're starting a new committee, that's what you want to do, you may want to have an explicit conversation that says, I need you to commit for at least 1 year, and I need you to commit for at least 2 years or something like that, so that it's staggered. And ideally, there is someone who's going to be identified as the chair, because you need someone to be the person who holds it. That can be rotated to the more, you know, as new people come on as members, the more experienced people come up as chair. That's going to be my answer to that question. Did you have a second question, Mara, before we move on?
I did it. And it's not quite as relevant to the makeup of the committee. It's just, I'm just curious, how many communities would you say currently have the Rabbi Liaison Committee in place? I'm just curious sort of how common it is in the movement.
Nina or Tressa or Elliot?
I'm not sure. I would defer to Tressa. However, I do know that on the survey that just went out to all the RRA rabbis, and on the survey that is going to be going out to our affiliated congregations, there is a question about liaison committees. If the rabbi in that congregation has a liaison committee, and the flip side, if the congregation has a liaison committee, and we'll have a better idea after we get back all of those responses.
What I can say anecdotally is that I spend a lot of time consulting and training liaison committees. I do a lot of liaison committee trainings. So I will say that I know that newer congregations with newer rabbis tend to have them because we really push that. And I do a lot of training with that. So, you know, I mean, I can tell you four or five congregations represented here that have them. And it might be interesting at some point to talk about maybe either on the listserv or another conversation, you know, people's experience with it. I'm going to move on for now.
I just want to say on that point, Mara, or anybody else who's on this session, if you want to talk to a congregation that has an existing liaison committee because you're thinking about what you want to do, how you want to set it up, et cetera, just let your liaison know, or let me or Elise know, or Tressa, and we'll be happy to give you, you know, 3, 4, 5 congregations that currently have liaison committees, and then you can reach out to them and say, okay, how are you doing it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great idea.
Yeah, and about half the people that registered for this call have them. And we asked that question in the registration. True. So there are many folks in this space that likely have one as well. So
and let's just say there is always the ideal that we put forward, and everybody, and then there's how it plays out in reality. And it's always interesting to hear how it plays out in reality, which sometimes is more interesting and valuable than the, you know, than the ideal that we put forward. Okay, so let me outline the process of liaison committee. I believe that it's really important that the process, that the liaison committee meets regularly. I'm not gonna mandate the number of times, although I have suggestions, but again, with the idea that this is a regular, normalized part of congregational life, even if they don't have much to discuss, the fact that they're meeting regularly means that it's not a surprise when they have something to discuss. Just like in all of our jobs, we have regular supervision meetings because we wanna have that ongoing relationship. And it doesn't come as a surprise when our supervisor or our boss wants to meet with us. It's just a regular thing that happens. We recommend that for new rabbis in particular, as new rabbis are coming in, probably twice a month is how long it's going to take you to meet. Moving to monthly as the rabbi settles in, and of course, what that time frame is where the rabbi settles in is could be anything from 8 months to 2 years, depending on what's going on in the congregation. But eventually, it will be maybe as the rabbi becomes less new and more settled, maybe monthly. And then it could move to, if things are moving slowly and there's a lot going on and the congregation is, you know, humming along, it could be as little as quarterly, 4 times a year, but should not be less than that. So sometimes between 2 times a month for the newest rabbis to no less than 4 times a year for everybody is how often the committee should meet. There should be regular, as we said earlier, regular and clear announcements and invitations to the congregants to raise issues of concern to liaison committee. And then it's the liaison committee's job to figure out what to do with that information. The liaison committee meets without the rabbi to take the information that it's getting and do the most important job that it has, which is to evaluate and discern the information and decide where it goes. Sometimes the liaison committee might get information that has nothing to do with the rabbi congregational relationship at all. Someone just called them and their job is to say, oh, this isn't actually for us. This is for some other committee over there. That's one thing that they may decide. They may decide that it is not something that the rabbi has control over. And in fact, the conversation back to the people who've raised this concern is to say something along the lines of, this isn't something that we are going to bring to the rabbi because it's not, either it's not in the rabbi's control, nor is it something that we as a community want to push with our rabbi. So discerning what to do with information is really important. It is the most important job of the committee to decide what to bring to the rabbi and what not to bring to the rabbi, in addition to how to bring it. So what does discernment mean? Here are 4 points that I like committees to ask. Is this a concern, something that the rabbi has control over or can do something about? So for example, my favorite example is this. You can tell right now I sound really terrible because I'm so sick, but I am not one of the more musical rabbis of our movement. There are lots of rabbis who are very talented musically. It's not me. My congregation knew that when they hired me. They hired me anyway. Every time someone brought to the liaison committee, hey, you know, Rabbi Elise doesn't sing very well. it was not a good use of their time to spend time telling me that someone thought that I couldn't sing very well and recommend X, Y, and Z music lessons. That's not a good use of their time. That's not a good use of my time. All it does is make me feel bad, and there's nothing I can do about it, right? So discerning that the rabbi can't do something about it, and it's not important, it's not what we hired that rabbi to do, is an important discernment to say, thank you for sharing that with us. That's not a concern we're going to raise with the rabbi. Is it part of a pattern? Number two, is it part of a pattern? If someone comes to the liaison committee and raises one concern that the rabbi missed something, one concern should be addressed, yes. But is it part of a pattern? And if it's not part of a pattern and it's a one-off, let's treat it as a one-off and figure out how to make that, correct that or deal with it? Or is it part of a pattern and needs a different kind of conversation? So is it something the rabbi has control over? Is it a pattern? Is it in keeping with the goals of the community and expectations laid forth? Someone comes to the liaison committee and says, I'm really upset. The rabbi did not include, to make sure that they read, I'm just using this as an example, all seven aliyot and a maftir and the full haftarah in the Torah service last week. I'm really upset about that. Can you complain to the rabbi about that for me? That person might really be invested in that thing happening, but the fact that the rabbi didn't do that was probably not the rabbi's personal decision, but probably reflected the conversations and viewpoints of the overall committee and the overall community and the value of what they want to have in services. If that's not true, that's a different conversation. But if the rabbi is doing what the majority of the community expects and what is laid out for them in their job description, bringing to their attention how someone's unhappy with that is not useful, because it's not about the rabbi doing something wrong. It's about the person having a misunderstanding of what this community values and wants its rabbi to do. So, the rabbi didn't show up to lead, only shows up to lead services one Friday night a month. If the contract with the rabbi is to lead services one Friday night a month, that's not a legitimate complaint about the rabbi. That's a complaint about, I wish this congregation was doing something differently. And you can have a conversation about it, but it's not something that needs to be brought to the rabbi's attention in that form. And finally, the fourth thing in decision and discernment is, how are we going to raise this to the rabbi in a way that we can suggest, what are we going to suggest that the rabbi can do to address the concern? So it's not enough to say, a couple of people have been concerned that you haven't called them back when they've said that they've been sick and in the hospital. So questions that the committee needs to ask is not just the rabbi hasn't called them back when people are in the hospital, but the committee also may want to say, has the rabbi gotten the messages? Do we know if there's a communication breakdown? Like strategizing what else may be behind the issue that is the stumbling block, and going into the conversation that is then going to be had with the rabbi about what is the problem here and what can we do strategically, systemically to help fix it. So those are the four asks. It's, is this something the rabbi can do something about? Is it part of a pattern? Is it in keeping with the goals of the community and the expectations laid forth? And what are we going to suggest or ask to help uncover what else is systemically going on to help the rabbi address this concern? That's what the committee can bring to the rabbi. Now Elliot's going to share with us what the rabbi can bring to the committee.
So as we've mentioned more than once in this brief conversation, the liaison committee is a two-way street. So it's also an opportunity or a forum or a place where, with a lot of goodwill and with these regular meetings that take place that really build a relationship of trust between the rabbi and these congregants, it's a place where the rabbi can also bring concerns that the rabbi is having about whatever is happening in the congregation. So it's not a place to bring private issues from pastoral encounters. Use the example that Elise just gave about hospital visitations, for example. It's not the place to come and say to the liaison committee, oh, did you know that so-and-so was in the hospital for 3 weeks and I went to visit them, but nobody else from the congregation called them? That's a different kind of a conversation. But if it's a systemic concern, in other words, no congregants who have been in the hospital have been called for the last year, then that is the place to talk about a strategy. Maybe we need to talk about establishing a congregational care committee or a Bikur Cholim, a visiting the sick committee, things like that. So that's the kind of issue that the rabbi could bring, not a specific account, but a system-wide issue that the rabbi has discerned from their ongoing activities with the community. This might be also the place where the rabbi brings questions about prioritization and balance. The rabbi has a job description, a position description, and there should be an opportunity to say, okay, these are the things that we're expecting or that you're expecting from me, but you know, I'm running into an issue with time or I'm running into an issue with not getting enough staff support. And I need to know what are our priorities among the 25,000 things that you've asked me to do as your rabbi. And maybe the strategy is that, well, we have a part-time secretary or a synagogue administrator. Maybe we need additional staff support. So this is the opportunity for the rabbi to say, okay, I understand these are all things that you're expecting from me, but maybe I'm only able to get to these many. What are the priorities? Let's talk together about what the priorities are and how we balance that. Right? Because sometimes it may be that the priority is X for the next month or two, and then that will have been covered and we need to move on to something else. So we need to find a balance among the different things that the rabbi is expected to do. And the rabbi says, you know, help me to find the balance. The other thing that rabbis can, of course, gain from the interaction with the members of the liaison committee is context. This is especially important with relatively new rabbis who might not have yet the history of the congregation, the background about the particular players or who are the influences in the congregation. The rabbi may say, you know, I'm getting just a constant flow of calls from one particular congregant. Without naming names, I just wonder, has there been a pattern in the past with certain congregants being more needy than others or being more demanding than others? And especially this is where those longtime members can really have some input. Or there's an issue that came up with the rabbi and it seems to have come out of the blue, but the rabbi can come to the liaison committee and say, listen, this is an issue. I'll give you just one example. We had an issue with the congregation where I'm now rabbi emeritus about flags on the bima. Maybe other congregations have dealt with this. And the new rabbi was not aware that in 1942, a policy was put forth by the congregation about flags on the bima. And the opportunity did not arise because there was no liaison committee at the time. And the only thing that could be done was to try to find one of the longest time members to say, what's going on with this particular issue? So those kinds of things where historical context or background are necessary, the rabbi can gain that from these conversations with the liaison committee. Now, we said that the president appoints the committee in most bylaws, but what's the role of the president vis-a-vis the liaison committee? First of all, I want to stress that the president should not be a member of the liaison committee. The president should be meeting regularly with the rabbi as a matter of a policy or of the institutional development, but and should check in regularly with the chair of the liaison committee, but should not be sitting on the liaison committee herself or himself or themselves. The liaison committee is not a replacement for the regular meetings that the rabbi has with the congregational president. So I just want to stress that, because those kinds of interactions with the president can take place sometimes daily, sometimes even multiple times in a day, depending on what's going on in the congregation. So the president should not be part of the liaison committee, but should be getting regular communications from the liaison committee, and may take it upon herself, himself, themselves to communicate through the chair of the liaison committee certain things that may have come to the attention of the president.
Thank you, Elliot. Thank you. And that's a tricky question. We're happy to answer more questions about that. The last point that I want to talk about is, how does this relate to supervision and ongoing evaluation? And then we're going to open it up for questions and comments about how this actually works. Because as you see, we're spelling out, I think we're illustrating, you know, sort of an ideal process. And then every congregation figures out how it works on its own. So this last point is about connecting to evaluation and supervision. I think that the liaison committee is an ongoing process that should exist all the time and is separate from, but not unrelated to, evaluation and supervision. It is often very helpful if there's overlap between the liaison committee and the evaluation committee, but it is still a separate committee. And the rabbi's work and ability to respond to the liaison committee and work with the liaison committee is material that is appropriate to be evaluated. So when you get sorry, I accidentally muted myself. When you get to the point where you are, where you have established a committee to do an evaluation of a rabbi, and we've talked about evaluation before, we'll talk about it elsewhere, and there's a handful of the people in the community that you're going to seek input from for the purposes of the evaluation, liaison committee is a perfectly good source of information for that evaluation. It is completely appropriate for the people in the evaluation committee to say to the liaison committee or themselves, please, you know, tell us how the rabbi is responding to and working with the liaison committee. Is the rabbi able to manage the challenges that come up, to strategize appropriately, to reflect on problems, to hear critique and concerns raised in a meaningful way? That is appropriate material to be included in an evaluation committee, from the liaison committee to the evaluation committee. And the same way that ongoing supervision is done. If there is a concern that something's not working in the liaison committee, the liaison chair can bring that to the designated supervisor, who's often the president. And so the communication goes back and forth. So although this is a separate ongoing process, it is absolutely appropriate to see it as a place for information about the other ongoing processes of supervision and evaluation. So that was a lot in a nutshell. And we have 20 minutes left that I'm hoping we'll flush some of this out in conversation with questions and other comments.
Jane. So you can use the hand raising function or just raise your hand and we'll try to see them.
I see Jane from Adat Shalom, and then Joanne from West End, and then Judy from Or Shalom. So let's do those three to start. Go ahead, Jane.
JJJ.
JJJ, first J here. Thank you. This is really helpful. Two questions. One, how, when you mentioned that at least at the beginning, the committee should meet twice a month with a new rabbi. So how many of those meetings are meetings with the rabbi versus those other meetings of the committee alone to discern what to bring? So that's one question. And then the other What thoughts and recommendations do you have about how the congregation is instructed to bring feedback to the liaison committee?
Awesome. Great questions. The link that I shared earlier, where which I'll share again, and I know that Nina will send out later, has a really great description that is shared out to the community about how to do this. In terms of your second question, I think it's really important that congregants are informed about the liaison committee, invited to speak to the liaison committee, and the congregation can decide on its own. Emek Shalom actually established one email address for the liaison committee that goes to all of its members. That's one way to do it. You know, if it's your community's minhag or tradition to put the personal emails of the members, that's out there. You know, however you do it, it should be very clear who's on the liaison committee and how do they get in touch with them. It should be something that's publicized. Your first question about the beginning journey, I think it's I think most of the meetings at the beginning are actually with the rabbi, because the rabbi is so busy just trying to figure out their job, and these are the people that are helping them do that. So it is often the case that in the very beginning of a rabbi's relationship, we have something called the transition committee, and then the transition committee morphs into the liaison committee along the way in some form. And the transition committee is meeting with the rabbi all the time to talk to them about, you know, like what to do first, what to do second, who are the people that they need to reach out to, who are the people that are waiting to hear from them. That's happening at the very beginning. Every congregation is different, but at some point they will be able to move away from that sort of like slightly urgent transitional moment to a more reflective moment, whether that's 4 months in, 6 months in, 8 months in, kind of depends on what's going on in the world, the trauma that the congregation has experienced previously. At some point it will transition from that to the more reflective point of view. In no case do I think it's a great idea for any liaison committee to simply turn around and dump what it's hearing from people onto the rabbi. In all cases, I think some level of discernment needs to be made, especially at the beginning, because at the beginning, people are gonna say what they want and not get it right away. And it's not helpful to just turn around and dump that onto the rabbi. So there's a little bit of that discernment process that's happening, but it's also a lot of the conversation is with the rabbi. Does that make sense, Jane?
Thank you. That's
good. Good. Okay. Joanne.
This is perhaps a tangential issue, but very relevant. It seems to me that these committees, the rabbi, the people working with the rabbi, they can't succeed if the synagogue itself hasn't done a self-evaluation and agreed to what its goals and missions and objectives are. I ask, obviously, because that's the situation that we're in. We're very, at this point, there's a lot of tumult. There's a lot of questioning about what and who we want to be. And so my next move is to undertake such a self-evaluation. I've had some feedback from someone at Beth Am Shalom who's gone through this, but if there's going to be a session on that, we don't need to belabor it, but I wonder if you can say something about the importance of that and if others have undertaken it and might be able to help us with some insights.
Joanne, I think that's a brilliant insight, because it's quite true. The rabbi cannot be held responsible for fulfilling a job description that not everybody agrees is the right job description, right? That's like that's where it gets to the nuts and bolts, right? So if the community hasn't gone through, whether we call it a self-evaluation process or a strategic planning process or a mission clarifying process, all of those conversations to say who we are, what we want to be, and therefore what we want our rabbi to do, right? A job description for the rabbi has to come out of clarity about who the congregation is and what the role is that you want your rabbi to play. And if that's not clear and the congregation is not behind it, then it doesn't really, you know, then the liaison committee is going to be getting complaints that the rabbi is not doing what person A wants them to do, or the rabbi's not doing what person B wants them to do, but the congregation has no clarity about whether the congregation wants to be A or B. That's kind of a no-win situation for everyone. So you're absolutely right. And I think that actually comes one of the reasons why, sorry some to some folks on this call, and I'm going to say it, one of the reasons why we strongly recommend an interim rabbi in between a long-term rabbi and a new one is so that the congregation can take the time to identify who it is, what its mission is, and carefully craft a job description that reflects where they want it to go. And then, because the only thing a rabbi can be responsible to is what the congregation has said collectively it wants, right? And if the congregation has not clarified collectively what it wants, it's kind of a no-win situation. So, yeah.
I would only say that it's a little bit different of a process when the congregation has a rabbi in place already. It's a little bit maybe easier, or certainly it's a different process when the congregation is in transition. So I think that Tressa and Nina both heard your appeal to have a future session on doing those kinds of processes.
And in fact, I'm meeting with Tressa today, thankfully.
Good.
Right, and that's, you're really talking about mission, vision, and strategic planning there, which is really awesome. Judy is next in line, and then we'll go back to the line at the top with questions. Judy from Or Shalom.
Yeah, in San Francisco. First of all, I want to say—
You're a new rabbi. Congratulations.
Yes, it's very exciting. So that was what I was going to say, is we have a new rabbi, and I was asked to be on the liaison committee. And I had never heard of such a concept before, and I really want to give y'all props, because I think that it is such a good idea. But what I wanted to address was your statement that the committee should be involved in the rabbi's evaluation, because our charge, our particular liaison committee, our charge is to be the rabbi's person. So, and it was specifically stated, if there's a conflict between the board and the rabbi, our role in that is to take the rabbi's side and to be partisan, not to be objective, but to be partisan. We're the rabbi's people, and we're on her side all the way, no matter what. I mean, the good news is I don't anticipate that happening. And we've never had it happen, but I think there's a conflict between that charge and being part of the rabbi's evaluation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I might not say it quite so, and let's remember, I'm the supporter of rabbis. I'm the person who's actually always on the rabbi's side, and I actually don't think that's an appropriate way to phrase it. I actually think, but you're on the side of the rabbi's success in the— Yes. —particular community. You're on the side of this rabbi's success in this community. And that has to be your guiding force. I do think, yes, I think you're right, that there can be some conflict. And that's why I don't think that the liaison committee is the same thing as the evaluation committee. I think there is some overlap, but not 100%. And I think each community will work that out on its own.
My question is, I think there's going to be, I think the rabbi has to trust the confidentiality of what happens in that room with us, and know that she can say things that are never going to come back and bite her on the ass.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'll just go back to what Elise said earlier. While there may be some overlap, the important thing is that there's communication. When the time for evaluation or assessment comes, whether it's annually or every 6 months for a new rabbi sometimes, then the chairperson of the evaluation committee should reach out to the chair of the liaison committee and ask, are there things that have been discussed within the bounds of confidentiality that you can share with me that we should be taking into consideration when we talk about assessment and evaluation? Because assessment and evaluation, and we'll have another session on that, I hope, one of these days, is also an opportunity for strengthening the rabbi's chances for success. So something that arises in the liaison committee that, you know, that says, okay, with this, something came up in the liaison committee, we talked about it with the rabbi, and in your case, she has really run with that and taken it and has really, really stepped up and improved. So the evaluations committee should know that the rabbi is totally open to suggestions for improvement.
I'll also say that I think it's really important that, and this is something that we might need to help rabbis understand, the liaison committee is there to support the rabbi's success, but the liaison committee is part and parcel, works for, and is made up of members of the congregation. It is not the, it is not the place for the rabbi to go for emotional, psychological, and spiritual support. That is not appropriate. That is what spiritual direction, cohorts provided by the RRA, mutual, you know, other sort of group supervision places are for. You know, and this is sometimes hard for congregants to understand, but a rabbi should never assume 1,000% trust and confidentiality from any member of the congregation. The congregation should expect 1,000% confidentiality of the rabbi, for sure. But I think if a rabbi is coming into a congregation, expecting the liaison committee to accept everything that they have to say and never share it outside, even, you know, casually, that's naive on the part of the rabbi. And I'm more than happy to do a training session for rabbis on that. Rabbi is essentially your employee, and will always be your employee.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's try to get the next couple of questions before we run out of time.
Sure. Let's do Sean, Shana. Sorry, and Alex.
Okay, and Shally. We'll make them all shows.
I know everybody was Jay, and now it's all.
So great to be with you. Thank you, Rabbis Elise and Elliot, Rabbi Elliot. I think this should be a mandatory session for all rabbis. It's been a good continuing education for me and a really good refresher. And thank you. I've learned from it as well. I would add to everything that I want to nod with and appreciate your tweaking, Rabbi Elise, of the last offering, because the last thing you want is the liaison committee to be kind of part of the faction, meaning, you know, rabbi at all costs, because then how can you tell the rabbi some appropriate, rethinking or some cumulative feedback ahead if it might be uncomfortable for them, etc. I'd rather hear that from my liaison committee than to find out at the end they were just supporting my vision of things and it was a real shock. So that's definitely, and Elise and I, of the many years we've worked together at JRF, would often, when those roles were conflated, I'm so appreciative of that being lifted up today, of separating evaluation and liaison, because the times those were conflated, we were often presented with the case where the rabbi was moved out because, and at the end of the day, it turned out that two people didn't like the tunes of their services, but they hadn't attended for 3 years, but those two were presented as a bullet point with the other eight positive things. And all the rabbi knew from the committee was that people were upset with melodies of services and none of the context or the fact it was one out of 200 households. So I think that's really important. The one, especially in these days and times, which I was grateful to be acknowledged, in addition, I found helpful that we've developed over time is not having that being the only place of mutually supportive dialogue. So not everyone has an Israel-Palestine committee. We do. And I was deeply touched by our chair, who reached out to me a week ago and said, this is more than one human being can handle, the needle you're trying to thread. Can we set up a time where just a person of your choice and I meet with you only to talk about this issue, where you get to share your heart and get some support separate from the planning and programming and pastoral work. And we also set that up in our Spiritual Life Council, where the council, which is tasked not just for programming, but maintaining the pulse of the soul of the community, not only its offerings, insisted that myself and my rabbinic intern get a chunk of time at each monthly council meeting to talk about what is going on in our soul work, where we could use some support spiritually to support everyone else. So fanning those things out in those specific areas has been a great blessing and has done something to mitigate the loneliness of the position, especially when it comes to hot button topics. And that may be too much or not appropriate for a liaison committee to handle. So I just wanted to add that thought in the mix. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for bringing forward such a wonderful model.
I'm happy to put these in the chat as requested. I'll just say one is about authority versus responsibility of the committee, and the other is about any best practices when you have more than one clergy. Do they share a liaison committee, et cetera? So I'm happy to put those in the chat. Thank you. It's a very valuable session.
Yeah, that's great. You know, the question about multiple clergy is a really good one. And I actually have not given that much thought. we probably should. Yeah, go ahead, Elliot.
I can just say quickly that there are some congregations that have a clergy liaison committee where they take time at each session for the different clergy, or they space it out and they say the first meeting of the month is for the senior rabbi, second meeting of the month is for the assistant rabbi. Next meeting, we do the cantor, and then the rotation starts again. And others have separate committees for each member of the clergy. It depends on how the resources are. So that's a quick answer to that question. The other question is, I think, more complicated.
I imagine that the one thing that I'll say about multiple clergy is that I imagine that there has to be some overlap, because I imagine that some of what comes in is not clear, is not actually about a particular clergy person, but about a system. And so they have to figure that out. Like if the complaint is that no rabbi called me in the hospital, then the question is which rabbi was assigned and how did that communication happen? That can't just be brought to one rabbi. That's about a system. Right. So there has to be some overlap in that conversation. Yeah. And the last, someone else had their hands up. Alex had his hands up for the last comment, I think.
And I want to recognize that it's 2:00. And if you need to go, we're very glad that you came. We will stay on the call to take Alex's question, but I want to point to, Nina put in the chat a link to register for the next call as well. So if you need to go, feel free. Thank you for coming. And Alex.
Yeah, thanks. So you have a president who has somewhat defined roles. You have a board, somewhat defined roles. I would be concerned, and I'd like to know how to handle this, that issues be brought whenever possible to that existing relationship where it's appropriate. First, triage it through the president to keep the nature of that relationship strong and give the opportunity for that rabbi president dynamic to continue to grow in a sharing, trusting way, and use the liaison committee when issues really are greater than what can be dealt with in that relationship, so neither party feels as if there's a sort of a run around that important day-to-day relationship.
So I'll just go back to what I said earlier, and that is that the liaison committee is not a substitute for regular, ongoing meetings, communications between the rabbi and the president. It sometimes happens, especially when issues come up, that the rabbi and the president are speaking multiple times during the day, not necessarily face-to-face meetings, but on the phone or or some email exchanges or whatever it is. But the liaison committee is that place where the rabbi and representatives from the congregation can be hashing out questions that have arisen about priorities, questions that have arisen about what are the needs of the congregation. Those are not the kinds of things that should necessarily be dealt with in regular meetings with the president, unless something has really gotten out of hand and needs to be dealt with immediately. Usually the liaison committee is a place where strategies are developed for a long-term plan for dealing with those kinds of questions.
As opposed necessarily to the role of the board.
I would say something different. I might actually say something very different, which is that I actually don't think, I mean, you know, I could be wrong, but most presidents have a lot on their plate. There's a lot. It's actually one of the hard, it's a really hard job. And my heart goes out to the presidents of congregations because there's so much on the plate about just kind of the ongoing organizing of all of the volunteers and keeping things going, keeping things running and making meetings happen. Most presidents that I've spoken to don't actually want to be the one that has to track all of the things that people are saying that are bringing to their attention about concerns with the rabbi. Most presidents are really happy to say, I hear you, this is really important, please bring it to the liaison committee. Because in order for the president to do that, so the president has all the things to keep going. You've got to be planning the meeting, make sure that the committees are meeting, make sure that the board agenda is set, have regular meetings with the rabbis to talk about this, that, and the next program. To also then track how many people have complained about this thing and who's complained about that thing and what's the context of that complaint and what's the background of that concern, that's too much work for the president. And so this is about taking that off of the president's plate and giving a place. Remember, the president appoints this committee underneath the president's auspices for all of that to happen with integrity. Because otherwise what tends to happen is that the president doesn't actually have time to do the discernment and thinking through what's the best way to bring this and just brings it. And that means every meeting with the rabbi, between the rabbi and president, becomes one of a list of, this is something that I heard that has to be dealt with. This is something that I heard that has to be dealt with. And that is very draining for all parties and doesn't lead to a lot of success. I want to encourage the presidents to see this as a way to help them manage what's coming to them, as opposed to skirting around the president. That's the way that I would see it.
I guess I misunderstood. What I'm hearing is it's possible that the rabbi can triage the issue with the president first, and then the president can say, this should go to the liaison committee. Yeah, is that what
course.
I'm hearing?
Of
yeah, because I wouldn't want to, I as president wouldn't want issues to just, to really not come for my at least knowledge and consideration.
I've never met a president who wanted to hear everybody's complaint about the rabbi, but if you were that person, mechuz.
I think the key word there, Alex, is triage, right? I mean, triage, it means this is an emergency and we have to deal with it.
Right.
But if it's something like the illustration that Elise gave earlier, that you know, somebody's coming to you as president and complaining about the rabbi's singing voice or about the melodies that are being chosen, mm-hmm. that's an opportunity for you to say as president, I hear you, I understand you. That's mm-hmm. a great thing to bring to the liaison committee so that we can work through it.
Okay. I Nina, do you want to wrap or do you want me to?
Either way, I thank you all for being here. Thank you for staying a few minutes. I want to thank Rabbi Elliott. I want to thank Rabbi Elise. I want to thank Tressa. We will make sure that the questions that didn't get answered have some follow-up, and your liaisons are here for you. So reach out. And I did put our next call is going to be with Tressa about leadership development. So please come or invite the appropriate people from your congregation to come, and we'll be sending out reminders about that as well. So thank you all so much, and take good care.
Thank you all.